Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulip. Today I'll be talking with Baker Peoples, resident music director of the Lamplighters Music Theater, about their upcoming performances of Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore, actually already in production, in venues around the Bay Area. Mr. Peoples will be joined by mezzo-soprano Sonia Gariev, who plays the role of Buttercup, and soprano Jennifer Mitchell, who plays Josephine. From the Friction Quartet, I'll talk with cellist Doug Matches and violinist Otis Harriel about their upcoming performances at Old First Concerts with pianist Sarah Cahill. From the California Shakespeare Theater, Cal Shakes and Arinda will talk with playwright Madhur Shaker about the world premiere of her play, House of Joy, set in a harem at the end of the Mughal Empire, around 17th century Delhi. Stay with us. The Friction Quartet will be joined by pianist Sarah Cahill for the world premiere of Max Stoffregen's The Gila, Mesa, River, and Mountain, plus Jeffrey Gordon's Abba Siskus and the world premiere of Family Group with Alien by Piers Helliwell. That concert's next Friday, August 16th at Old First Concerts. And I'm pleased to be joined by two members of the Friction Quartet. The quartet exists to modernize the chamber music experience and expand the string quartet repertoire, and they do this by commissioning new works, curating imaginative programs, and collaborating with artists and presenting interactive educational outreach. They've given more than 90 world premiere performances and commissioned some 55 works for a string quartet. And they've served as artist-in-residence for the New Music for Strings Festival in Denmark, the Lunenburg Academy of Music Performance in Nova Scotia, as well as closer by in Napa Valley and the Old First Concert Series. I'm joined by two of the members. Doug Matches is the cellist with the group and currently resides in Oakland, where he is co-founder, manager, and cellist with the Friction. In addition to working with the quartet, Doug teaches and freelances and has participated in the Banff Musical Chamber Music Residency, Deer Valley Music Festival with the Muir Quartet, the St. Lawrence Emerging String Quartet Program, the Bang on a Can Summer Festival, among others. Doug, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Violinist Otis Harriel is from Arcata, California, and has performed with a number of regional orchestras and chamber ensembles, including the Eureka Symphony and Humboldt State Symphony. He's also participated in, among others, the Sequoia Chamber Music Workshop, the Idlewild Chamber Music Program, the Sphinx Academy of Music, as well as the Mendocino Music Festival and Castleton Festival. Otis, welcome to Open Air.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about how the quartet formed, first of all, and your dedication to new music. Doug, you want to tackle that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I moved to San Francisco about 9 years ago, and just before that, I had met Kevin Rogers, the other co-founding member and violinist, and we were working together at a festival in Italy called Zephyr Chamber Music Festival. And we had been assigned to play a Philip Glass string quartet together, his third string quartet. And that was one of my early experiences playing contemporary chamber music. And I just absolutely fell in love with that. And also, I really loved working with Kevin. I knew Kevin had already moved to San Francisco for school. I told him, oh, I'm thinking about coming to San Francisco for school. Would you be interested in starting a contemporary music string quartet with me? And he said, yes, definitely, that's what I've always wanted to do. And so I moved to San Francisco, and we started the quartet, and we've been going strong ever since.
Nice. Have some of these works that you've commissioned gotten some other play by other groups as well?
Yeah. Recently, a piece that we commissioned by Adam Cuthbert called Universe Explosion for double string quartets. You play along with your own pre-recorded track That piece was played by a group in Philadelphia recently, so that was a very exciting moment for us.
Mm-hmm. I've got to ask this of both of you. I mean, when you're involved in creating new works, has there ever been an instance where you just, you know, literally had to hold your breath or hold your tongue and just get through it rather than really enjoy it? In other words, have there been dogs in the commissioning work, without mentioning names?
Yeah, for different
so
reasons.
Serial.
Sometimes we get something that seems impossible, and that's definitely one reason you can get through a performance and be like, wow, glad we made it. But that's always really exciting when a composer is asking you to do something that you maybe have never thought of doing.
Stretching your limits.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's always exciting because you're learning something new.
And it's also an educational moment for them, too. You can say, well, you know, this is what you need to do.
Yeah, although we're definitely really big fans of saying, we can try to make that happen.
Yeah, there have been moments where composers have just kept pushing us to play faster. And, oh, I think if you practice it more, you can really play it faster, and we will not really believe them and say, okay, we'll do what we can. And then sure enough, a month or two later, we are playing it that fast. So
yeah.
It's really cool to be pushed past your limits and sort of expand what your abilities are.
Yeah. I will also say there's definitely personal preference, of course, when you're talking about any new piece of art, whether you quote-unquote like it or not. And sometimes you get a commission that you play it for the first time or you hear it and you're like, I'm not so sure how I feel about it. But really the best part is when you play it for other people and you get all their opinions, because I've been pleasantly surprised. Sometimes I think we're going to play something that no one likes and they all love it.
Mm-hmm.
And alternatively, sometimes we play something that I absolutely love and the people that I thought would also love it don't love it as much.
Mm-hmm. Give me a sense of traditional writing in terms of what a composer is presenting versus off the board non-standard writing. In other words, just physically on the page, are people still going outside the box of five lines and little black notes?
Yeah, absolutely. Composers are constantly reinventing the wheel in terms of notation because they're always imagining wilder and newer sound worlds. For example, when we were in Denmark at the New Music for Strings Festival, we had a piece where he created an entirely different notational system based on how far we play from the bridge or fingerboard in terms of the fractional length of the string, and then also how much pressure we put into the string using a number system. So it was just completely different.
Yeah, I remember that was one of those when we got it, I was thinking to myself, well, there's no way this is possible. And then we played it, and there were differences between these fractional, you know, sounds.
Mm. Yeah,
I'm thinking also of some of the very colorful and creative scores that have been created by John Cage, and mm-hmm. something that's visually very different from what you'd expect to have a string quartet.
Absolutely, yeah, that's still happening all the time. And I think also people are getting inspiration from other systems of writing music, because obviously we have this Western system of writing and playing music, but it's not the only way that people have organized music in the past. So people are kind of looking to different cultures to organize music differently. And it's really interesting what that does to a performance.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear a bit of your music. We're going to hear one of the composers that's represented on this concert, Max Stuffregen. Tell us a little bit about Max and how you came across his music.
So I first met Max at the Bang on a Can Summer Music Festival in Western Massachusetts, an incredible program that's been going on for decades. And we really hit it off, and he approached me about writing a piece that was inspired by a trip that he was going to be taking, hiking the Pacific Crest Trail all the way from Mexico to Canada. Unfortunately, his gear was stolen when he got to Northern California, so his trip was cut short, but he did enough of the hike to accurately title the piece The California Crest, because he did hike all of California. So this piece was written about 5 years ago, and it was one of our earliest commissions, and we play it all the time.
Let's hear a little bit of it, and then more with the members of the Friction Quartet. taste of Max Stauffregen's Cinder Cone from California, California Crest. It seems like learning more about Max's music, he's very much inspired by nature. That seems to be driving all of his works, including the one that's coming up for the concert with Sarah Cahill.
Absolutely. So the piece that we're going to be premiering is inspired by his experience hiking along... Well, he told me recently it's pronounced the Gila River. So the piece is called the Gila River Mesa Mountain, and it's a trail that runs from east to west across Arizona. So it's a totally different type of outdoor world than the Pacific Crest Trail, which inspired California Crest.
Wonderful review of the concert that you did at also at Old Firsts of that piece. Congratulations on that.
So thank you.
Let's hope we'll get to hear it in its entirety sometime. Tell us a little bit more about what else is represented on this program and how you not only chose the composers, but then are working with our wonderful Sarah Cahill.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, so one of the other pieces on the program is from a round of commissioning projects that we do every year, the Friction Commissioning Initiative, and this is how we've chosen the composers to work with. We choose six composers every year to commission, and these are two of those commissions, the first piece by Max and this piece by Piers Helwell. Piers is a composer that we first met in Detroit at the Great Lakes Chamber Music Festival. He's from Belfast, and we instantly fell in love with his music when we were set to work with him. We actually didn't know any of his music before working with him at this festival, but turns out he had written two quartets that had not gotten played very often. So we're very happy to have played two of them a lot, and now we have commissioned a third piece by him. And this piece is called
Family Group with Aliens.
And no one knows what that means. Okay. But the good thing is that he's getting here in a few days, and we can ask him what he means by that.
All right.
But I do know the concept behind which he wrote this piece, which is he was thinking about those Russian nesting dolls and how that concept could be used in music. So he wrote basically one movement and then split it up into smaller and smaller sections, the smallest of which is probably 20 seconds long.
Mm-hmm.
And then he took little themes from each of those movements and expanded on them in what are called reflectophores. And we get to order the concert however we like. And any time a composer writes you a piece where you get to do whatever you want, it makes you pretty happy.
And there's also an intriguing title on the program, Jeffrey Gordon's Abasiscus, all in caps, A-B-A-C-I-S-C-U-S. What's the story of that? Doug?
So we actually haven't met Jeffrey Gordon, but he reached out to us with, he was offering to write us a new piece and also sent us this older quartet that he was interested in having us playing, and we instantly wanted to play it. We think it's really cool. And this piece is inspired by ancient art that is in the Palermo area of Italy. It's tile or ceramic art, and so each movement of the piece is inspired by one of these pieces of art. And one of the pieces, the third movement, is titled Bikini Girls, because the art really looks like a woman wearing a bikini. And he quotes a famous Beach Boys song in this movement, but we won't give it away. You'll have to come to the concert to figure out what that song is.
All right. And working with my colleague, good friend, and phenomenal new musician champion, Sarah Cahill, who's put out some 20 CDs of amazing music, is well regarded around the world for her work as a commissioner herself and extraordinary piano skills. Have you worked with Sarah before?
No, this will be our first time working with Sarah, and ever since I've been in the Bay Area, I've admired her work and seen several of her performances. So we have sort of been in the same orbit, both being new music musicians, but yeah, we haven't worked together. We got to know each other better because we were both at the Interlochen Center for the Arts at the same time last year. She was giving a concert, and we were a quartet in residence there. So we had drinks and we talked about potentially working together back in the Bay Area.
That's how relationships are made. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and then we had already commissioned this piece by Max. He had already started writing it. So this seemed like a great opportunity to work on something together. And in fact, we're planning a full concert program for sometime next season.
Is that the one piece that Sarah's involved in on this concert, or is she?
Yeah, just this one piece, and much more to come later.
I'm sure, yeah. The Gila, Mesa, River, and Mountain by Max Stoffregen, world premiere with Sarah Cahill and the Friction Quartet at Old First Concerts next Friday, August 16th. Also, music by Jeffrey Gordon and Pierce Halliwell. We'll hear some Pierce's music now as we conclude our talk together. And I'll just remind people that to learn more about the concert next Friday, August 16th, go to oldfirstconcerts.org. These links will be at our website as well. And to keep up with the Friction, frictionquartet.org as well.
.com.
Oh, frictionquartet.com. You're a .com. We can do that. So tell us what we're going to hear, something called Floating of Pierce Halliwell.
Yes, this is from his first string quartet called The Still Dancers, which was inspired by him just taking a look at those trees on the coast. They've got very similar ones in Belfast that they do in San Francisco, and they're kind of bent over. And he was just imagining how something can be so still and yet look like it has moved so quickly.
Nice. Cellist Doug Matchis and violinist Otis Harrell, thanks so much for coming in and sharing some time with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Music of Pierce Halliwell. A touch of the music of Pierce Halliwell from the Friction Quartet. You can hear his intriguingly titled work, Family Group with Alien, as part of the Friction Quartet's concert next Friday, August 16th at Old First Concerts. Friction Quartet will be joined by our own Sarah Cahill on piano for a world premiere. Old First's concerts.org, frictionquartet.com for more information. Still to come here on Open Air, by the way, good afternoon. I'm David LaTulipe. Our weekly radio magazine of the performing arts, Open Air, continues with music of HMS Pinafore shortly. And next, well, California Shakespeare continues its 2019 summer season with the world premiere of House of Joy by Mater Shaker as part of their New Classics initiative. It opens next Wednesday through September 1st at the Bruns Outdoor Amphitheater. The play was a darling of the 2018 Bay Area Playwrights Festival, and House of Joy is a swashbuckling romance where women wield the swords. The setting? A harem at the beginning of the end of the Mughal Empire, 17th century Delhi, where I'm pleased to be joined by the playwright now, Madhur Shaker, whose plays have been performed internationally and here in the U.S. She was born in California, grew up in India, spent time in Singapore and London, now living in Los Angeles. In addition to the world premiere of House of Joy, the season of this year sees the new commission from Victory Gardens, Daba on Devon Avenue. In addition to these commissions, she's been commissioned by Atlanta's Alliance Theater and the Kennedy Center. Her playwriting is informed by an MFA degree in dramatic writing from USC, as well as a dual master's degree in global media and communications from the London School of Economics and USC. In addition to plays, she's currently writing for the upcoming HBO show The Nevers. Welcome to Open Air. So happy to have you aboard here.
Thank you. Happy
and
to be here.
Congratulations on such amazing work that's being produced all over the world.
Thank you.
This particular play, House of Joy, has had a healthy period of development. Mm-hmm. Not only the reading at the Bay Area Playwrights Festival last summer, but it's been, workshopped or worked on at the Atlantic Theater, Juilliard, New York Stage and Film, the Predatwani Theater, and South Coast Rep, among others. So tell us a little bit about this big gestation period for House of Joy.
Yeah, I've been very lucky to have many talented artists like help me develop this play. I wrote the first draft in the spring of 2017 and worked on it at Juilliard, where I was doing a playwriting fellowship, and we had our first staged workshop there as well, and we've had several readings since. And frankly, like, I think the most development that has been done on the play actually has been since Cal Shakes extended their production offer. So this year has been incredibly exciting with lots of rewrites, and just from the time we got into the rehearsal space, the play has grown an incredible amount. So, I mean, the heart of the play is still the same, the impulse is still the same from when I first started writing it, but it's just growing more and more epic. So I'm excited to see it on stage finally.
Nice. So it's been done as a reading mm-hmm. exercise more than anything else up to this point. Tell us about the decision for being such a... tell us the role that gender has played in your casting.
Yeah. So this play is inspired by many different periods of Indian history, mostly the Mughal Empire, but also the Delhi Sultanate and the custom of imperial harems. And that just always kind of fascinated me, the Mughal Empire in particular, but also just the idea of all of these women living together in one space and what is that like. And I went to college in India at an all-girls Catholic undergraduate program, so I'm kind of familiar with all female spaces and the dynamics that happen there and the joys and the oppressions of systems like that. So I've always tended to write about women. That's what I'm interested in. And the thing that excited me most about this play when I first started researching harems is discovering that the Emperor's Secret Service, as I like to call them, the bodyguards of the harem were women because men were not allowed inside.
Oh,
so you needed somebody to protect the royal family, right? You needed somebody to offer security. And so they would recruit warrior women from different tribes across the world, from East Africa, from Mongolia, from Turkey, from present-day Kashmir. So it was this very cosmopolitan mix of women who lived in the harem. And immediately, I was like, well, I need to write a play where there's a lot of fighting.
Well, that fact alone is fascinating.
Obviously,
if these people are bodyguards, they need to be trained well.
Yes.
And I guess your play shows a lot of fighting.
Yes. It's fun and aspirational and very genre-influenced. And I think it's shaping up to be pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about the training that these actresses had to go through then.
Yeah. Well, we're working with an amazing fight director, Dave Meyer, who is part of Dueling Arts fighting company based in San Francisco, the Bay Area. And him and his assistants have really done an incredible job training our primarily three actresses who are doing most of the fight work. In staff and in sword and in hand-to-hand combat and in, like, more like what we call street fighting. And the actors have been incredibly game, and they're just doing things that I am astonished by every day. I can't believe we get to watch them do this. And they do it with joy and with the full informed context of their characters and history. And it's just really cool. So it's really great as a playwright to give actors an opportunity to do something that they might not get to do otherwise, because most stage combat roles are not necessarily done by women. Mm-hmm. But this is something that's not just really cool to see on stage, but it's actually informed by history. So we can say, like, this is not something we're completely making up.
Right, yeah. Right. And I imagine your costume designer and production designer were excited as well, because they could do a lot of research and
yes.
bring these visuals to life as
yes.
well.
Yeah, our costume designer, Oana Boats, is incredible. I saw a sneak peek of the costume. She doesn't want me to see the whole thing, because I also want to be surprised when I see our dress rehearsal, basically. But yeah, we are. The production design was actually informed. We talked a lot about Black Panther and Wonder Woman, and how those movies created fictional places that are still informed by historical reality and historical design. And so we have created a kind of alternate Mughal empire that is inspired by many aesthetic elements of Indian history, but not necessarily bound to it. So the costumes are beautiful. They're stunning. And I can't wait to see the actors move about in them.
Nice. Talking with Madhuri Shaker about the world premiere of her House of Joy at Cal Shakes in the outdoor Bruins Amphitheater. Dress warmly, I should just
yes.
warn you.
Lots of layers.
It's a great setting, but yeah. They do have blankets for you, though, if
yeah.
you need. A beautiful setting for Cal Shakes. Now, you worked with Megan Sandberg-Zekian on your play Evil Eye.
Mm-hmm.
Has she been with you since early on in the process of House of Joy?
Well, she's been with us since Cal Shakes has came on board. So Megan and I were working on an audio play, Evil Eye, that is now available on Audible. And we had an amazing time working on that together. So when the time came to choose a director for the first production of this play, it just felt like a natural fit. So we have been having a pretty intense working relationship over the past year and a half, because we've been doing two new plays almost simultaneously. And it's been great. She's not only been able to translate the kind of epic quality of the play in terms of the very ambitious production design and all of the production elements, but is also so deeply in tune with the characters and the nuances and the, you know, the reality of women's lives at any time in history. So it's been a really great partnership.
Nice. I just gave the basic storyline about the harem. Tell
yes.
us what the storyline is and why all this fighting happens in,
yeah.
in the show.
Yeah, so the play is set, you know, we say once upon a time and place, and it foregrounds this one bodyguard of the imperial harem, and at the opening of the play, she realizes that the chief queen, the most important woman in the harem, is actually trying to escape, and she stops her. Because that's her job. But that moment kind of shatters all of her illusions about the paradise that she thinks that she's living in. And so with that kind of pivotal decision of basically like stopping the queen but then not reporting on her, in a sense keeping the queen secret, it starts a chain of actions that and consequences that happen when a person suddenly is awakened to their conscience. It's okay, I just described it in a bit of an abstract way, but basically it's like, what happens when you realize that the place you grew up in is not all that it's cracked up to be? What do you realize when you realize that you're complicit in systems of oppression? What do you do when you decide to finally do something good for the first time in your life? And what do you have to sacrifice in order to do that? So she starts making these really pivotal decisions, and she starts finding allies where she didn't realize she could find them. And the whole nature of the harem slowly starts to change as people start to make decisions that they never thought they could make before. So it's about... You know, I'm really inspired by our political climate right now. I'm really inspired by, like, what do we do in our everyday lives as ordinary citizens? How do we fight for what's right while acknowledging our own complicity in the power that we have in this country? So, yeah. And in the course of, you know, in the course of trying to break somebody out of a harem, you have to do a lot of fighting. So that's where that comes in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does this play have legs, so to speak? Is it going to be produced elsewhere that you know of yet, or are you working on other venues for it?
It's going to have its second production at San Diego Rep, which I'm really excited about. And that's going to go up in March of 2020.
Fantastic.
So we have that on the docks and hopefully other places soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what else are you working on?
I am working on the commission that you mentioned earlier, Dalba on Devon Avenue, which mm-hmm. is going to go up at Victory Gardens in April of next year. And that is specifically about the South Asian community in Chicago and Devon Avenue, which is Little India. And it's about a restaurant that's been there for generations, and it's about family-run business. So I'm pretty excited about that. And I'm also working on TV and film stuff, and...
Can you give us a little snippet? We mentioned the HBO show, The Nevers. It's off my radar entirely. Can you tell us? Can you tell us about what that's going to be all about?
Yeah. So it's a new show by Joss Whedon, who did Buffy and Angel and Firefly and The Avengers and Avengers Ultron. Basically, one of my childhood pop culture heroes. And so it's a new show about it's about Victorian women who get superpowers and then save the world. And it's wonderful. It's just such a glorious period sci-fi fantasy mishmash. It has all the stuff I love. I mean, he read House of Joy, which is how I got the job. So it's more period women kicking ass in beautiful costumes. And I believe they're filming right now in London, and hopefully it should be out in the next year. We'll see.
Well, that sounds like a fun job for that. So can you give us a little insight into the process of you as a writer for that? Are you part of a team of writers? Mm-hmm. Is there a writer's room where their ideas are tossed about? Are you given an assignment? How do things work with that?
Yeah, I think it was my first TV show, so I can't speak to TV writing in general. But the way this show worked was there was a writer's room, a really wonderful, diverse writer's room. We essentially help Joss, who's the showrunner, achieve his vision for the show. So he outlines kind of the big ideas of what he wants to achieve with the show, and we help by brainstorming, by tossing out ideas, by presenting plot solutions, by presenting character questions, and most of the writers get an opportunity to write at least one or two scripts for the show. Our job is essentially to help the showrunner achieve the kind of storytelling that they want to achieve. It's a really, really fun writing challenge because you're not writing for yourself. You're writing for somebody else, and you're trying to honor what they're trying to do. Mm. And it really helps if you're a fan of their work.
Sure.
So being a huge fan of his work, it was just a real joy to be like, well, what would Joss Whedon do here? I get to try that now. So really cool.
Well, we'll be hearing a lot more then from Madhuri Shaker as the months go by if you tune into HBO. In the meantime, you can catch her swashbuckling romance where women wield the swords, House of Joy, as Cal shakes. It's running through the, how late does this run? Through August, September 1st at the Bruins Outdoor Amphitheater. My good friend Philippa Foote does pre-talks 45 minutes before each show. By the way, Philippa, Paul Drescher's wife, Paul Drescher, great composer. What a wonderful power couple they are, with Philippa's great insights providing and informing Cal Shakes for years now. Also, this coming Wednesday, the 14th, you can do a Pay What You Can preview. There's an opening night post-show party on Saturday, the 17th, following the performance. You can meet the artists on the Sunday performance following the 4 p.m. performance there. There's also an open captioned performance for the deaf or hard of hearing patrons on Wednesday, August 21st, and an Insight matinee Sunday, August 25th, which follows the 4 p.m. matinee, where you can explore the world of the play in an informal dialogue with the production's dramaturge. And that's also a free discussion afterwards. There is a complimentary shuttle from the Orinda BART station beginning 2 hours before curtain. And Cal Shakes is in Orinda. Learn more at calshakes.org. Madhuri Shaker, thank you so much for coming in and sharing some insight.
Thank you.
And House of Joy looks like a fun production to catch at Cal Shakes. Calshakes.org, that website will be listed at our website, klw.org, in the open air tab. We'll be right back. a touch of the overture to HMS Pinafore, or The Lass That Loved a Sailor, a comic opera and two acts by Sullivan and Gilbert, better known as Gilbert and Sullivan. It opened at the Opera Comique in London in May of 1878 and ran for some 571 performances, the second longest run of any musical theater piece up to that time. It was Gilbert and Sullivan's fourth operatic collaboration and their first international sensation. The story takes place aboard the ship HMS Pinafore, the captain's daughter Josephine, in love with a lower-class sailor. And although her father intends her to marry Sir Joseph Porter, the first lord of the Admiralty, she abides by her father's wishes at first, but Sir Joseph's advocacy of the equality of humankind encourages Ralph and Josephine to overturn conventional social order. The play takes a great good-natured poke at patriotism, party politics, the Royal Navy, and the rise of unqualified people to positions of great authority. Very pleased to learn that the production of HMS Pinafore by the Lamplighters is enjoying a run here in the Bay Area. It opened at Walnut Creek at the Lesher Center for the Arts. This Saturday and Sunday, it's in Mountain View at the Mountain View Center for the Performing Arts. It's at the Blue Shield of California Theater, so now called, at the Yerba Buena Center here in San Francisco on the 17th and 18th, and it concludes in Livermore on the 24th and 25th. It is known as one of the big three of the Gilbert and Sullivan canon, and who else to do such a wonderful production than the folks that have been doing Gilbert and Sullivan for many, many years, the Lamplighters Theater Group. I'm joined by three of the creatives of this particular production. Baker Peoples has sung almost all of the Gilbert and Sullivan tenor leads, as well as operatic leads, and he has conducted almost all of the Lamplighters galas since 1986, as well as hundreds of performances of Gilbert and Sullivan and other operettas and musicals. He was voted the best male singer in the 1995 and 1997 International Gilbert and Sullivan Festivals and maintains an active voice studio here in San Francisco. Welcome, Baker Peoples.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Joined by Little Buttercup, Sonia Gariev, who is making her Lamplighters debut in this role. She made her debut in the role of Iolanthe back in 2003 and is returning to Lamplighters here. Since then, she has performed such roles as Katisha in The Mikado, Ruth in The Pirates of Penzance, and Lady Jane in Patience. She's a three-time Metropolitan Opera National Council regional finalist and has completed the Portland Opera's Apprentice Artist Program and was a fellow with Carmel Bach Festival. Welcome to you, Sonia.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And Josephine is also in the studio, Jennifer Mitchell. I heard Jennifer Mitchell recently in the incredible production of Sweeney Todd down at the Hill Barn Theater, where she performed the role of Joanna. She's appeared as Jane Airhead, Patience, and Ida in Deflator Mouse. She recently made her San Francisco Symphony solo debut in Mendelssohn's Lobgesang. Other credits include, as I mentioned, Sweeney Todd, The Music Man, and Oklahoma, as well as Beach Blanket Babylon. She's also sung with Opera San Jose and is a member of the San Francisco Symphony Chorus. Welcome to you, Jennifer.
Thank you so much.
And congratulations. That role of Joanna in Sweeney Todd is still very dear to my heart. Baker, long time with Lamplighters. Tell me how you first got associated with this wonderful group.
I was just freshly moved to San Francisco in 1974, and one of my high school friends from Texas said, oh, you should look up my aunt and uncle. They live in San Francisco. They're good for a dinner. So I went to dinner at their house, and they said, oh, you're a tenor. You should have auditioned for the Lamplighters. And I asked what that was. And, so a few months later, I auditioned. I got in, and, who knew that my life was going to be filled with so much Gilbert and Sullivan. I've happened upon one of the greatest Gilbert and Sullivan companies in the world, mm-hmm. without really knowing it. I had grown up knowing some Gilbert and Sullivan through records, and I, from an early age, and my family liked it. So I was at least familiar with that, and the show they were doing was HMS Pinafore.
No, yeah. Wow.
So I auditioned, and I had no experience. I was in the chorus, and I was understudying Rafe, the tenor lead. I met my wife there. She was doing Josephine. you know, so the company is a wonderful performing company, but it also is serves a social function for a lot of people who come to the Bay Area from other places. It kind of is a stand-in for family. It's definitely a community, a lot of people. And what I've noticed through my 40-some years with the company is every single production is a combination of people who have been doing it for a long time and people who are doing it for the first time.
Interesting, yeah.
Which gives the newcomers the experience of getting into an established company that knows how to do this repertoire, and gives the old-timers among us the excitement of being with people who are hearing this music and these jokes and these lyrics for the first time.
Can we really call Gilbert and Sullivan the birthers of musical comedy, or the musical for the most part?
Well, probably not only them, but I think that a lot of what we think of as what we love in musical theater would not be possible if Gilbert and Sullivan hadn't paved the way. Mm-hmm. It certainly is the 19th century version of what we think of as musical comedy.
Mm-hmm. Since you're very familiar with Pinafore, having performed it before, the storyline, from what I understand, is poking fun at some realities of British times.
Yeah, Gilbert's, except for Princess Ida, which was based on a Tennyson poem, every one of Gilbert's shows was his own creation from the ground up. So he wasn't based on something else. And he was lightly satirizing Victorian society, the things that people thought had to be a certain way. And in many of his shows, particularly in this one more than any others, he's kind of taking the stratified social hierarchy. You know, you're born in your station. This is a word we don't even use in this country, meaning, you know, high-born or low-born. We don't think of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, classes didn't mix, you know, in those days. We like to think that we're a classless society, but basically what these shows, almost all of the Gilbert and Sullivan shows are built on obstacles to love. I mean, are you rich enough for me to marry you? You know, so in that respect, it doesn't really matter whether it's a hereditary nobility or just people who were born with money.
Right,
not wanting to share it with people who don't have it.
Well, apparently, Sir Joseph Porter, the character in HMS Pinafore, was fairly not well disguised version of a real person by the name of W.H. Smith,
right?
A politician who had recently been appointed First Lord of the Admiralty back then, despite having neither military nor nautical experience.
Right. Imagine a cabinet member with no qualifications.
That
just doesn't happen.
Inconceivable. Inconceivable. So, yeah, history does seem to repeat itself.
Yeah.
So, Jennifer, playing Josephine, how did you first come to Gilbert and Sullivan?
I actually got to sing a few bits and pieces of Josephine at various points in my vocal training. One of the very first classical trios I did was Never Mind the Why and Wherefore, with Peninsula Teen Opera, an organization that allowed teenagers to explore opera as they're getting their training. And I told Baker I sang Sorry Her Lot in undergrad as a student there. So I've gotten little bits and chunks along the way. I first did Deflatormouse with Lamplighters in 2014, and really fell in love with the company and had always enjoyed Gilbert and Sullivan, but never really done much of it, and have fallen in love with it as a result of being with the Lamplighters and being exposed to this group of people who are so knowledgeable about the repertoire and really know how to bring the material to life.
Uh-huh. And tell us about the character Josephine.
Josephine's a really fun challenge. She's a big sing. Her arias are certainly challenging, but she's a very spunky and feisty character, which is not something that's always given to leading sopranos. And just a truly, truly motivated by her heart, and follows her passion more than a lot of characters do. So the combination of this amazing music and this character that is brought to life in her is a real joy.
Mm-hmm. So you, like Sonia, have been all over the map in terms of your performance venues, from Beach Blanket Babylon to the stage of Opera San Jose. Do you go back and forth with pleasure, or do you like one aspect of your singing life more than another?
I love doing all of it. The prioritization of music over acting, and how that balance shifts in the different genres, is really fun to explore. And I grew up loving musical theater, listening to Rodgers and Hammerstein and Bernstein and all of those composers. So that's always been part of my musical background. But I also grew up listening to opera. So it's a treat to be able to be in a place where I can do all of those things. Mm-hmm. And it's always nice to change things up.
Nice. That's Jennifer Mitchell playing Josephine in the Lamplighters production of HMS Pinafore. Sonia, as Buttercup, how are you seeing your operatic training apply to Gilbert and Sullivan?
Oh, that's an interesting question. My operatic training applying to Buttercup, I'm honestly applying more of my acting training to Buttercup rather than the operatic training. I feel like at this point in my life, singing the role of Buttercup is pretty easy. It's nothing's too high, nothing's too low.
It's not in Czech.
It's fun. Yeah, it's not in Czech. It's not in Chinese or Japanese or some other language that I have to translate. But I think the acting challenges are getting more and more interesting. This is my third time playing Buttercup. And as I get older, with each production, I'm learning more and more about the character. And at the same time, I'm learning more and adding new things. There's some things that I can kind of let go of from my earlier interpretations of Buttercup that I think, I think I'm changing my mind at the way she's actually looking at this area of text. When she says something, what is she meaning? She talks about the fact that she dissembles a lot. So in this production, I'm kind of changing up what I think is a lie, what I think is a truth, and what Buttercup thinks in general.
Sonia Gariev playing Little Buttercup. Baker, you brought a recording of an earlier version of HMS Pinafore. Who are we going to hear singing the signature tune, I'm Called Little Buttercup?
This is Sonia from...
Oh, this is Sonia. Fantastic.
4 years ago, I think.
Still I'm called Buttercup, poor little Buttercup, sweet little Buttercup I. I've snuff and tobacco and excellent jacky, I've scissors and watches and knives. I've ribbons and laces to set on the faces of pretty young sweethearts and wives.
Little Buttercup, that'll be sung once again by Sonia Gariev in the Lamplighters production of HMS Pinafore. Beautiful sound there.
Oh, well, thank you.
Baker, tell us, were you involved in the casting then for this production?
Oh, yes, of course.
So how does that work?
Well, we announce auditions for each production that we do, one at a time, and we cast from the people who walk through the door. So as I said before, there's a mix of people who are doing it for the first time. So we have several people making debuts with the company in this, in principal roles and definitely in chorus roles, and people doing their roles for the first time, mm-hmm. and some doing it after doing it three times in terms of Buttercup here. But I think both Rafe, the other Josephine has done it once before. But both of the tenors are new.
And as far as choosing which Gilbert and Sullivan work to go, I mean, you've had a long history. You must have to look at that and see what's coming back.
But
for
right.
Has everything been done now by Lamplighters?
Yes. And the Thespis is the first thing that they wrote together, but the music has been lost, 90% of it.
Mm.
The words still do. Actually, in San Jose, they've just done a production. But you have to find music from some other source or write it yourself. Mm-hmm. So we have never done Thespis, but we've done all of the others.
And what's down the road for Lamplighters then?
After this, in next winter, we're doing Princess Ida, which is the one, only one in three acts. It's a wonderful story about it's kind of women's lib. The title character started a women's college because she wanted to forswear the company of men. But it turns out she was married in infancy, and her husband from way back when shows up. So that's what that story is about. But before that, we have our fundraiser. This is going to be in October, the gala, which is an original piece using Sullivan's music, but with a whole new book and set of lyrics. And this year, the theme is going to be Downton Abbey and Burning Man.
Okay.
I have no idea how that's going to turn out, but...
stay tuned.
Yeah. That'll be a lot of fun.
And you can learn more about the gala in October at Lamplighter's website, lamplighters.org. The performances, once again, you missed the one in Walnut Creek, but fear not, fair Gilbert and Sullivan fan. This coming weekend, it's in Mountain View at the Mountain View Center for the Performing Arts. Next week, the 17th and 18th, here in San Francisco at the now-named Blue Shield of California Theater at the Yerba Buena Center. And then rounds things off in Livermore at the Livermore Valley Performing Arts Center the weekend of the 24th. Lamplighters.org for more information. Sonia Gariev as Little Buttercup, Jennifer Mitchell as Josephine, and Baker Peoples leading them all. I thank you all for coming in today and wish you a wonderful production.
Thank you very much.
Please keep us informed as to your other activities, and we'll talk with you again. Let's go out with When I Was a Lad from HMS Pinafore, an earlier production by the Lamplighters.
Served 8 term as office boy to an attorney's firm. I cleaned the windows and I swept the floor, and I polished up the handle of the big front door.
He polished up the handle of the big front door.
I polished up the handle so carefully that now I'm the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
He polished up the handle so carefully that now he's the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
As office boy, I made such a mark that he gave me the post to the junior clerk. I served the writs with a smile so bland, and I copied all the letters in a big round hand.
He copied all the letters in a big round hand.
I copied all the letters in a hand so free that now I am the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
He copied all the letters in a hand so free that now he is the ruler of the Queen's Navy.
To brief excerpt from the HMS Pinafore production of a number of years ago. You can catch the latest production. Go to lamplighters.org for more information. Let's hear a little bit more of the overture, or actually We Sail the Ocean Blue, I think, from a previous production, a production conducted by Charles McCarris, as we conclude our time together on Open Air. I'm David LaTulipe. You've been listening to Open Air on Local Public Radio, KALW. Links to everything you've heard about in today's show are at our website, kalw.org. If you've got a suggestion for a show guest, by all means, send me an email, david@kalw.org. And if you happen to be in the neighborhood of Burton High School in this next 20 minutes or so, come share some birthday cake for my producer, Neil Swinkles, whose birthday was yesterday. Happy birthday, Niels, and thank you for your incredible work on Open Air. Stay tuned next week here on Open Air at the same time for more local performing arts news and information. Thanks for listening.
We stand to our guns all day.
excerpt from the Charles McCarris recording of HMS Pinafore on the Telarc label. Once again, HMS Pinafore by Gilbert and Sullivan and performed by the Lamplighters is coming to a theater here in the Bay Area near you. Learn more at lamplighters.org.